in the bleeding sing first. That's what it's got in the program. Singing in the bleak midwinter, 55 in Voices United, and then following that with the Sussex Carol.
Thank you.
to us, I think, by virtue of a sublime blend of words and music. This was originally a poem by Christina Rossetti. It was commissioned by the magazine Scribner's Monthly and first published in the January issue of 1872. The version we sang this morning is probably the best known setting and has been part of many hymnals. It was composed in 1906 by Gustav Holst, the English composer, most famous for his work The Planets Suite. 5 years later, an alternate, and this is personal, but I think even more beautiful setting by Harold Dark established itself in England. And since then, it has become a standard with King's College Cambridge, with their BBC broadcast and their videos every Christmas. In a recent poll of 2008, this setting was voted the best Christmas carol, period. What we just sang on Christmas night has become known as the Sussex Carol, the words of which were first published by a 17th century Franciscan friar, later to become a bishop, one Luke Wadding. I have to be careful how I say that because my typewriter said waddling, and that wouldn't have been too good. He included it in a, I think this is wonderful, a quaintly named collection called A Small Garland of Pious and Godly Songs. The music is accredited to Cecil Sharp, or as they say in England, Cecil, but our thanks really go to the great English composer Ralph Vaughan Williams. When in England you never say Ralph, it's always Ralph. Ralph Vaughan Williams. One night he heard it sung by a soprano called Harriet Verrill, and she sang it in Monksgate, which is near Horsham, in the county of Sussex. And therefore, you guessed it, the Sussex Carol. But I think its best setting is in Vaughan Williams' piece, its instrumental work called Fantasia on Christmas Carols. Okay, next hymn. I would like to give you a sample of what I was referring to with the Harold Dark in the Bleak Winter. So, Allison, sorry about that miscue.
In the bleak midwinter, frosty wind made moan, erstead hot as iron, water like a stone. Snow had fallen, snow on snow, snow on snow. Midwinter, long ago.
Thank you.
if you've ever been confused about the difference between a carol and a hymn, you will find little reassurance if you turn first to Wikipedia. It begins with these words, and I quote, "The Huron Carol is a Canadian hymn." Oh, make up your mind, right? I'll leave it to the musicologists to sort that one out. Instead, I want to depart from lecture style and tell you a personal story as to why I love this carol so much. During my final 2 years at Yale Divinity School, I served as youth minister at a United Methodist Church in Trumbull, Connecticut. As a Canadian, I was proud to see that this Huron Carol, which we just sang, was in their hymnal. And each of the two Christmases that I spent with that congregation, we sang it, and I sang it out very proudly. The reason Americans know it is due to a folk singer who's practically iconic in the States, and that's Burl Ives. Do you remember him? Yeah. Anyway, on the way to my ordination in 69, we drove from New Haven to Penetanguishene, which is on the Bruce Peninsula in southwestern Ontario. We were going there to visit my late wife's sister, but I had other agendas. While there, I took a short drive to Midland, some 6 kilometers to the south of Penetang, and I was headed for the East Midlands Bird Sanctuary. But first, I had to make a deliberate stop in town at the Huronia Museum. And one of their main features is an exhibit dedicated to one Jean de Brébeuf, who is a Jesuit missionary, and the author of our carol slash hymn. Father Jean first penned it in the language of the Huron-Wendat people whom he served, and titled it Jesus Ahat Onhia. I remain grateful always for this visit of discovery for what is now regarded here as Canada's best hymn. The Holly and the Ivy. This, of course, is a much more recent carol. It's from the 19th century. The imagery, surprisingly not uncommon in Christmas carols, although you might wonder, focuses on the passion of Christ. Holly symbolizes blood, the red berries, and the crown of thorns, the sharp leaves. Ivy, being evergreen, represents eternity, fidelity, and strong affectionate attachment, such as wedded love and friendship. Now, as I'm sure most of you know, most of our carols are from the 15th and 16th century, where Latin was the dominant language in many churches. Latin, we now say, I think somewhat wrongly, is a dead language. But there are some people who keep it alive, and that are the botanists. And I number myself as an amateur among them. And when we get together, we sing, "The ilex aquifolia and the head erect ilex of," etc., etc. So there we are.
Thank you.
I'm going to ask a favor of those of you who've brought hymnals in with you. Turn, please, to number 58 in Voices United, Infant Holy. So, there's a tradition among singers and musicians to try and memorize as many as you can of the tunes that are in the hymnals, because some of them can be substituted for other sets of words and so forth. And reminiscent of someone you may know, one of the traditions also is that all of those tunes are always written in block caps. I don't hear a laugh. You don't know who I'm referring to. Oh, well, never mind. It passes. Where I need some help from the congregation is a volunteer who may be able to manage to speak Polish. If you look at the bottom right-hand corner of your page, you will see the name of this hymn in Polish. It defies me. I can't even get close to it. Any volunteers? No, all right, we'll pass. I'll just sing Polish carol, I think. You might say that the Poles, God bless them, love their carols. And if you're one of those people who really love carols, you should take a trip to Poland for next Christmas. But be forewarned that you probably won't get back to the island until Christmas of 2021, because the Polish people have thousands of carols. It'll take you a while to get through them. Anyway, we can thank Edith Margaret Gellibrand-Reed, now that's a mouthful, who rendered this carol into English in 1920. The song itself, however, is much older. It could possibly date from the 13th century, and the original Polish text from the 16th. But one of the reasons I love this carol, and I find it appealing and moving, are the four lines before the end of each verse. We have a simple ascent, musically, of one step from one phrase to the next phrase, three steps, and then a half step. So I'm going to ask Allison to play me an F if she's there. She isn't there. Oh, well, I'll just make it up. Good, good. Thanks, Lee. Swift are winging, angels singing, Noel's bringing, tidings bringing. It's very effective just going up like that. Ding dong. Ah, yes. This is about as fun as it's likely to get. It's a kind of rollicking carol that I love. It almost tempts one to insert a sort of spontaneous whoop of joy when you're singing it. Because it is, after all, as many carols are, originally a dance. And in this case, it's a French dance. And it has this wonderful title, Branle de l'officiale. The verb branler means, quote, to shake, to wave, to sway. But I couldn't help notice that most of you gave that one a pass. The lyrics came to us from a 19th century English composer, George Ratcliffe Woodward, and was first published in 1924. So that's a 20th century piece.
Terry, and warm thanks to